He started here. He is here. No one knows New York better. Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
To tell you that Harrison Ford, I know Harrison Ford, he is absolutely the real deal, Han Solo. And they have a new Star Wars coming out, Star Wars 7. But he is a very competent, macho adventurer. He is absolutely unslowed by creeping Father Time. He's an expert pilot. He's done this before. He crash-landed a couple of planes. He did some daring rescues with fixed-wing planes. He had a rescue with a helicopter. I've seen him relaxing. We were going to go scuba diving. I ran into him in Belize in Central America. I was sailing my boat around through the Panama Canal to California, and I was sailing down in Belize, and there's a ship, a beautiful Mariner 3, actually lives in New York Harbor. You could see it during the summertime. Harrison Ford had rented Mariner 3. He was living on board the yacht, the vintage yacht, when he filmed Mosquito Coast. So he says, come on, let's go scuba diving. So, say Han Solo, yes, Indiana Jones. How do you not go scuba diving with Indiana Jones? So it turns out we go into the water. He's got a spear gun.
we're scuba diving.
He's got the look. I swear to God, this is Indiana Jones in real life. He's got his eyes are bugged out. He's looking for prey. He's looking for predators. And he speared a couple of fish. But, I mean, that was relaxing. He's 72 years old. And he absolutely is refusing to concede anything. He put that broken airplane down safely on a golf course in L.A. there. And the golf course, of all things, was filled with doctors.
Yeah, I have one of them. You want to hear one of the doctors?
Sure.
So this is Dr. Sanjay Khurana, who is a spinal surgeon. I mean, the right guy to come upon him. And he said he right away recognized that it was Harrison Ford.
We all did, right? Raiders of the Lost Ark, an iconic film. I'm a spine surgeon, so I can kind of vouch for spinal stability issues. And I did a brief exam, smelled the fuel. I didn't want it to ignite.
All right, so the plane didn't ignite. The doctors got him all wrapped up. He was carted off to the local hospitals. And the good news is that Harrison Ford is expected fully to recover, just as all the passengers, the 127 passengers on board that Delta flight yesterday that had that heart-stopping accident. Delta flight 1086, 127 passengers, five crew. They hit that runway 13. They're coming in from the northwest. So is the wind coming in from the northwest. You're supposed to land against the wind. It helps you slow down. They were apparently landing with the wind, icy runway. The aircraft hits. The runway's plenty long. It's well over a mile long, 7,000 feet long. But it only gets down about 4,500, 5,000 feet down the runway, starts to veer to the left, crashes through the fence, and the Port Authority swears there was never any danger of the aircraft going into Flushing Bay. But if you see the shot from the water, you see that MD-80 hanging over the fence. What the hell happened? LaGuardia Airport scares the hell out of me. The man you're about to meet was commanding officer at LaGuardia and at JFK at various times. He's a certified emergency manager. He's director of crisis and emergency management at Redland Strategies. We welcome Kenneth Honig to the show. So, Ken, thanks for coming on. So what the hell happened?
Well, what you've got is, you've got weather conditions. You've got a lot of different things going on. Planes land in that kind of weather at LaGuardia all the time. And certainly 99.9% of the time, it all goes through safely. It's really too early to determine what the exact cause of this accident. The NTSB will take several months and do a lot of examinations. There's been a lot of speculation. Certainly some things that could possibly have happened is mechanical failure on the aircraft, either with the braking system, with the reverse thrusters, with the wheels themselves. There could have been an issue with wind, either hydroplaning or ice although the Port Authority had cleared that runway and done skid testing on it less than 15 minutes before. The two planes that came in just ahead of this aircraft reported good braking. That's something the pilots will do, especially in bad weather. They will report on braking ability and anything that they notice as they land, either in terms of wind or things. With regard to the aircraft stopping, that berm that surrounds LaGuardia Airport, it's primarily there where it was originally built to deal with flooding, because the airport itself is at...
Not to keep planes from going into the drink.
No, but it has done that in the past. It is, you know, it certainly is better than a concrete dike, which would not have given it all and would not have been as substantial.
And now, Kent Honig of Redland Strategies is joining me. Is your group investigating this crash?
No. No, we don't do that kind of work. We do emergency crisis management, but we don't do investigations. That's not within our realm.
But you were the commanding officer at that airport. That airport's kind of scary to me. When I look at this, and I usually think it's pilot error. It's almost always pilot error, whatever happens, unless, as in the Harrison Ford situation, maybe something out in the gas of the airplane, whatever. But as the plane hits, first of all, you're saying that they land with the wind with regularity? I thought the whole idea was to land into the wind.
Generally, you want to land into the wind.
And so why were they landing with the wind?
Well, that's a call that's actually made by the FAA control tower, not the airport, not the Port Authority. The FAA control tower, and they do that based on a variety of factors. One of the things that they do is, with this particular situation, normally the runway at LaGuardia, if they had been coming the other way, and this is purely conjecture, if they had run the other way, the last 1,000 feet of that runway is a pier that is out over the water. So because of the wind conditions on the pier, they may have decided, or over the pier, they may have decided they wanted people coming in that way as opposed to coming in and making the sharp banking turn.
Okay, I get that. Now, last winter, I was driving down Fifth Avenue in front of the New York Public Library. A cab stopped right in front of me. I happened to be on ice. I couldn't avoid it. I hit the brakes. The brakes locked, and I ended up hitting the cab. Doesn't this sound like this plane hit some ice? I mean, it doesn't sound like you really need to be a physicist to figure out what happened here.
Well, it's a good theory. It will be borne out or not borne out based on the examinations. But remember that when these planes are landing, they're constantly landing. They're constantly churning. They're also out there on a regular basis, not only clearing the runways with the plows, but they also have a brush machine that goes out, kind of like a street sweeper, and clears it. The runways are grooved to provide better, much better traction than on Fifth Avenue, and they put chemicals on the runways to melt the ice.
Okay, I got a final question, Ken, and I appreciate your analysis. Ken Honig of Redland Strategies, Director of Crisis and Emergency Management. When that plane's left wing started hitting that wire fence, that chain link fence that tops the berm at LaGuardia, it started, the passengers describe it, the wing is hitting the fence, knocking the fence down, and then finally the wing being ruptured and fuel leaking out. How big a danger, and this has got to be my final question, is that the real threat in a situation like this? How easy is it for that fuel to ignite?
Actually, at this time of year, it would be very difficult. For years, I ran the Port Authority's Aircraft Rescue Firefighting School, and when we would do firefighter training in the winter with jet fuel, it generally would take me several gallons of gasoline and some road flares to preheat the jet fuel enough so that I could get it to ignite in an open pit when I was trying to. So if there wasn't a fire, any kind of spark or anything to set that off, it was a relatively small chance that was going to ignite. Now, also, the Port Authority Police Aircraft Rescue Firefighting Teams were on the scene in less than a minute with, you know, thousands of gallons. Each truck carries 3,000, and there were 3,000 gallons of aircraft rescue firefighting foam. and they are trained to blanket that area immediately with foam if there's any chance of a fire.
Was there ever any chance of that aircraft going into the Flushing Bay?
There's always a chance, but that berm was very good at stopping it from going in.
All right, Ken Honig, I think the people deserve their money back at the very least, and I appreciate your expert analysis. Thanks a lot for coming on.
My pleasure. Have a great day.
So if you, ladies and gentlemen, if you were there, 866-ARELLO, I'd love to hear from you, 866-437-2536. I know that, who was it, Andrea Mitchell at NBC?
She got punked.
She got punked by the guy.
He said he was a member of the Giants and that he had been on the New York Giants.
Right.
And he had been on the plane and he called in. And, you know, normally they really research these phone calls when people randomly call in with reports. But apparently on this one they did not. And he started saying all kinds of crazy stuff. And she didn't even realize what was going on. Someone
she
had to
didn't
tell
get
her.
It. And they was like making anatomical references.
Exactly. And someone had to step in and say, hey, Andrew, this phone call is not real. This is like a Howard Stern call.
Yeah, right. Okay. I don't want any of those. Although they could be fun. It is Friday. 17 minutes after 10 o'clock. I have so much to talk to you about. I mean, with you about, I should say. Hillary Clinton and these, the email gate. There's so much about the Clintons that I think is so fake, like Orgy Island and all that stuff. But this one sounds like it may have some traction. I mean, to have a whole server. So when I talk about Hillary Clinton and whether or not the this latest scandal takes the bloom off that particular rose, there's that. I'm so frustrated with our war against ISIS. I don't know what the hell we're thinking about, but there's a big battle going on, and I haven't heard of a single U.S. aircraft participating in this battle. If this group, as the president says, represents such an existential threat to Israel and the rest of the Middle East and the Suez Canal and even to the United States, why the hell aren't we fighting this fight? 18 minutes after now, and we'll be right back.
Geraldo, the truth behind the story for New York. Live, local, on it. 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
26 minutes after 10 o'clock. You know, Hillary Clinton will almost certainly be the Democratic presidential nominee. And if the GOP, if the Republican Party doesn't have the sense to nominate someone who is an electable moderate like Jeb Bush, Hillary will almost certainly be the first female president, but between now and next November, we'll watch as the Clinton clan endures these increasingly throaty attacks from the crazy wing of the Republican Party. But just because the attackers on Hillary are ideological anarchists, that doesn't mean that they're wrong. I mean, Orgy Island is one thing. I mean, the Jeffrey Epstein, the high roller who invited all the movers and shakers to have the underage prostitutes give him massages and all that. I don't think that's the kind of thing that's going to sink Hillary Clinton. But this whole private email, this email gate fiasco, I think it's going to give plenty of raw meat. Enough to supply the Benihanas of the country. And the question is, did she do anything illegal aside from being sleazy? I'm going to investigate the facts and circumstances of that, but let me take this call. Danny is on the line calling 866-ARELLO. What's up, Danny?
Geraldo, ¿qué pasa, man?
Hey, bienvenido. Where?
Papa on the Grand Concourse.
Anyway, yeah, man.
Geraldo.
Yeah, man. I know the Grand Concourse very well. What's up?
All right. First of all, the 747s don't land at LaGuardia because the runway's too small. Those pilots are unbelievable the way they land those jets over. That's the problem. The runway's too small. Now, the thing with Hillary, listen, years ago, you know who was the big prop for talk radio, the conservatives, the make-believes? You. They used to say, did you hear what Geraldo said today? And they'd go wild and they'd stir everybody up.
Because I was the only defender of the Clintons during impeachment.
Exactly. But they used to use you as the prop, and everybody used to get all riled up. Did you hear what Geraldo said? The people are gullible. They want to be led. You know what it is? You know what the conservatives movement is a hoax. And conservative voters are like a kid lost in the shopping mall, and they don't know where to go, and they'll follow anything. That's all they is. The emails, this thing is nonsense. You know what they're going to be talking about next year at the campaign? During the presidential campaign, they'll be talking about Bill Clinton's girlfriends, right, and Iran. That's what they're going to be, and they're going to lose.
Who's going to lose?
The Republicans. There's not.
You think that because there's no there, or you just think the people are sick of attacking the Clintons, or what?
No, because the Republicans will not run on the issues that can win. Republicans will not run on issues where they can win on, and the Democrats will lie to win. That's the bottom line. Republicans, if they win on immigration, affirmative action, the big government, welfare benefits going to illegals, how people get beat out of jobs and colleges and schools because of race quotas, they would win. They have to get five states back to get to the magic 270. They can't get it back now. The Democratic Party is rebuilding their base by flooding America with the third world. That's the bottom line, Geraldo. I just said the whole thing. The audience is
way to go, Danny. Way to go, Danny boy. Pretty good analysis. I thought that he spelled out what should be the Republican Party platform. I don't think the Republican Party can win on immigration, though, although they're going to give it a hell of a try. I think it'll end up biting them in the ass. But I wanted to ask you all about Hillary. What do you think? I'm going to delve more deeply, more specifically into this email gate, see if there's any there. So there's a lot going on. Give me a call, 866-HERALDO.
Live, local, on it, 866-HERALDO, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
We're going to get back to Hillary momentarily at 36 minutes after 10 o'clock here on 77 WABC. Geraldo here along with Noam Layden. Before I get any further into the program, though, I just want to remember someone who passed yesterday who really was a very important person here in the city and to Catholics and just generally to Americans in the wake of the September 11th attack, the passing of Cardinal Timothy Dolan. Cardinal Egan. Oh, my God. Cardinal Egan passed. Kind of Timothy Dolan, obviously the current archbishop. So Cardinal Egan died. Cardinal Edward Egan died. He led us in the post 9/11 era. He was a good guy. He escorted, you may remember, Pope Benedict when he came on his historic trip. Cardinal Egan presided over a church that was very, in many ways, troubled, but kind of got its footing back, thanks to his steady leadership. And then his successor, of course, Cardinal Timothy Dolan, has added a little more, I don't know, maybe the common touch that was very important. But I love Cardinal Egan also. He's more of an Orthodox guy. Cardinal Dolan has a real sense, but Cardinal Egan, in his passing, we remember him for his the way he shepherded the 3 million or so Catholics in the New York area, and he left a lasting legacy. And we remember Cardinal Edward Egan, the defender of the church. He's a good man, and we lament his passing. And a relative, what did he die of?
Cardiac heart attack.
Heart attack.
Yeah.
Just 82 years old.
He'd been kind of ill for the last year or so.
Had he? All right. So remember. Cardinal Egan. I'm sorry for my faux pas there. All right, now to Hillary. Talk about faux pas. This whole email thing, email gate, is this a recognition or evidence of a kind of shadiness in her whole political being? Is it really incompetence? Is it something she did? Was she stretching the rules? Was she breaking the rules? More importantly, does this take the bloom off the Hillary rose in terms of her being the inevitable Democratic nominee and the probable next president? What do you think of Hillary? I think that's the bottom line. And why is it that she generates such intense emotions? People just don't say, you know, they like, they dislike her. They either love her or hate her. I know that my wife and a lot of women I know are very keen on a Hillary candidacy. They see her presidency as a seminal event, a historic event. Obviously, it will be as the first woman if she can win. And I think she can beat almost any of the Republicans. Jeb Bush is the exception. I don't know how you feel about that, but how do you feel about Hillary just generally? In Forest Hills, we haven't heard from Stan in a while. What's up, Stan? Hello, Stan. You there?
How are you?
Good, man.
Okay, great to talk to you, my friend. Leave this lady alone already. Okay, you needed to find something. Is emails the main thing? Is that going to take her down? There's 100 other things that could possibly
like
take
what?
Her down.
Like what?
I mean, I'm just saying, if you want to bring up, you know, this or that, but I don't think this is a major thing. Emails, what are they going to find? That she had secret conversations with the Chinese or this or that? She had emails, so what? It's not she's not a traitor. She's not. You're looking for something that's not there. The conservatives are constantly looking to take her down. They don't want to see her president. Of course not. But the question that bothers me more than anything is, will she run? And I don't think she's going to run. How's that? I don't think she's going to run.
Well, I don't know where you're getting that information, Stan. It looks like she's, in fact, accelerating her political involvement because of this scandal. I mean, she Wednesday night, she tweeted she wants all her emails to be made public. Now the Benghazi committee, and you know how I have such a low view of them. Now they have something to really set their teeth into. It's I think that this is enough confusion to give her some problems at least early on. But what do you think, Billy in Pennsylvania? What's up?
Hey, Geraldo, how you doing?
Good, man.
You know what? I really don't understand the Republican Party, and all they have is complaints, and they find ways to dig up stuff on people, but they have no solutions for anything. They find emails, like this is some big thing. What about finding some solutions for the poor people in this world? Or
all
know,
right,
the
Billy, that's
have.
A good point. They certainly they're arch complainers, but the Republicans have the majority in both houses of Congress, and what have they done so far other than embarrass themselves with threatened government showdowns and so forth? Shutdowns. Hey, George in New Jersey. What's up, George?
This scandal is going to break Hillary Clinton because it's tied to her going around and hitting up all those heads of countries that she visited on that airplane. She was doing deals to get money to contribute to that foundation of hers, and that's where those emails are tied into. She was nothing but a shakedown artist. She's a white female Al Sharpton.
Okay, very vivid. I appreciate that. Hi, who's this?
Hi, this is Geraldo, not for nothing.
Oh, hi, honey, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. Listen, friend, disclosure is key. With regard to Hillary Clinton, if she made her emails undisclosable, that's a problem for me. And I know you're not interested in Benghazi because you've said it over and over. But bottom line is she's disloyal. She's allowed an American to die there and other Americans. And Geraldo, you
why
are
do you say
there.
Something like
you're
that?
See,
you're so, I love your emotion.
You.
I love your emotion. But when you say something stupid, like she allowed the American
stupid.
To die there, that, how
sure,
dare you? Really? Where do you get that from? Where do you make that up? But she allowed an American to die there. It's just not in. Rocco in Long Island. What's up, Rocco?
Hi, Geraldo. How are you?
Good, man.
Watch it real closely. The fix is in. If you watch the mainstream media, read the papers, and keep close track, you'll see that I believe that Hillary is being pushed out. I really do. Just keep a close eye. She's making a big deal of this. They're making a big deal of it. Normally, they wouldn't run it. So I've seen it on MSNBC this morning. And they were making a deal out of it.
So they're they are critical of Hillary and the private email system on MSNBC?
That's correct.
That is interesting. That is fascinating.
Yep. Normally they wouldn't do that. They'd make a brief thing and they'd get it over with. But I have a feeling the fix is in.
All right. You know, I have my own relationship with the Clintons that's been up and down over the years. I really was the only one who backed them in 1998. You know, I tend to attract people in trouble. They flock to me because I'm not judgmental. And they came to me big time when the president got in a jam with the whole Paula Jones lawsuit and then lying about having sex with Monica Lewinsky and then the dress and all the rest of it. You know, then they were kissing my ass, the Clintons. So, you know, they were bending over backwards to be nice to me. And then, time went on and she really gave me the cold shoulder a couple of times in the field where I thought that, she intentionally turned her back in a way that was not very welcoming. And she did not seem to me a very pleasant person, therefore. Obviously, how people treat you is how you judge them,
Sure. Generally
speaking. I don't think that's unfair. That's human nature. And now, you know, the president, when I see him, the President Clinton, he's friendly enough, but he never has given me a real sit-down interview. Nor has Barack Obama for all the nice things I've said about him. Of course, maybe he just wants ass kissers. Maybe they all do. But in terms of likability, I think that men have a different take on Hillary's quote-unquote likability than women do. And I don't know if that's a gender thing. I don't know exactly what's going on. Maybe we see, you know, our own, domestic history or squabbles or tensions in her, and we project I'm not sure what it is about Hillary that generates such an intensely personal, emotional response. Why is it that Republicans in the one of the callers, I thought was spot on, I forget which one it was, why they are so ravenous when it comes to the meat of a Clinton scandal in a way that is, with Obama, it's a different thing. With Obama, you worry that what's going on, what's the agenda here, is there any racial thing going on or not? With the Clintons, or specifically with Hillary, it seems a gender thing. It really does seem, you know, if she was a man saying the same stuff, same scandals, I wonder if she would generate quite so emotional a response. I mean, does she generate in you a male hackle thing?
No, you know, I think they're fascinating on so many different levels. You know, you go back to all the scandals during the White House years when he was, you know, messing around with Monica Lewinsky, and you say, what is she thinking? What is going on in her mind that she's still with this guy? And then you hear that he's still, you know, then you hear these rumors, whether they're true or not.
Orgy Island and all?
Yeah, you wonder what's going on. Is it a deal in the making? And then you see, and then you can't help but notice that they're both really intelligent people. I mean, whether you like them or not, they are exceedingly bright people. And so, you may not like their politics, but they're not dummies.
And you have to consider the Republican field. Now, go to the Republican field. I mean, Ted Cruz. How would you like Ted Cruz to be the president of the United States? I like Rand Paul, but Rand Paul is like a specialty act. You know, that whole Ayn Rand
thing. It's very narrow.
You know, very libertarian thing. I like the marijuana position, but I mean, is he going to be the one with the sound judgment? Scott Walker comparing the demonstrators in Wisconsin to ISIS, you know, and you look at the field, who is going to run? Newt Gingrich going to run again? Mike Huckabee is running. Aren't they going to beat Hillary, honestly, head to head? I think Jeb Bush is the only one. He's the only person that you look at and you say, well, you know, his agenda is not that different from my agenda. I'm not a particularly ideological or partisan person, nor does he seem to be. But then you say to yourself, really, a Bush? Really, against the Clinton? Is this where American history is at? We can't get out of the way of, these two families? But I think that he realistically is the only one who could beat her, and I think she is totally running for president, and anyone who doesn't think so, is blind to the obvious. Why would you be taking such firm, countermeasures to this email scandal, which I will explain a little more specifically, and take your calls, which I appreciate on this Friday. What's on your mind? 866-ERALDO. We shall return.
Live and local, the Tri-State's most important issues with Geraldo, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
54 minutes after 10 o'clock, and what we are talking about is Hillary Clinton. Emailgate, the latest fiasco. Is it real? She's saying she will release all of these private emails. But the whole idea that she had a separate system set up, how legit was it? As I understand it, it didn't violate the law, though. I mean, it would violate the law now, but as it existed at the time, I think they changed it in 2014. It may have been 2013. But the question is, are they retrievable? And are they all accessible? All of them, not just the edited version. And will this have an impact on the candidacy, the sure candidacy of Hillary? 866 Geraldo. Dennis, you're on the line. What's up, Dennis?
Hey, Geraldo. How are you?
Good, man.
I think your listeners are missing the point.
Okay.
It's not the content of these emails that's important. You know, Hillary Clinton had a personal assistant who worked out of a house in Chappaqua who couldn't get a State Department security clearance because of her attachment to the Muslim sisterhood.
Are you talking about Anthony Weiner's wife?
Correct.
What's her name again?
Oh my God!
I forget it. We'll think.
What Uma. Is it? Uma Thurman. Uma Abedin. Abedin is that
Abedin.
It
was? Abedin. Yeah. That's Abedin. It. Yeah. Oh, so you think she set up the whole system just so she could keep Mrs. Weiner on the payroll?
Well, I don't know if that was her prime motivation, but the fact is that woman had access to all those emails. Now this is State Department.
And you think that
email.
She Anthony Weiner's wife was involved with the Muslim sisterhood?
You know, we asked Anthony Weiner that when he was here. You remember that?
Oh, well, thanks, Anthony.
And you know, he said it was total nonsense.
Well,
no
we
connection.
Asked him what that there was a connection between his wife
and the Muslim Brotherhood or anything like that. Any of these radical organizations. Remember when he was here? It was like 2 years ago.
But correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't Uma still with Hillary? Hillary
yes.
didn't dump
oh.
her because of
oh, I think she's going to be an integral
Skip.
Part. It looks like she'll be an integral part of this, you know, presidential campaign in 2015, 2016.
See, I have admiration for that. The fact that she didn't dump this woman, even though she got involved in this tacky, well, she didn't get involved, but her husband certainly did. It took down the whole family and all their aspirations. Remember, Anthony Weiner was going to be the mayor. He's going to be the first Jewish president.
Yeah.
And married to a Muslim woman. Well,
she's not Muslim.
What is she?
I'm not sure, but she's not Muslim.
Oh, well, look it up.
Okay.
We'll check it out. But why would she have a connection with the Muslim Brotherhood?
I just remember we talking about this with him, and he really got upset that we had gotten it wrong.
Oh, so. We did. Okay, let's not get it wrong
yeah.
again. Bad enough I killed off the wrong cardinal earlier. all right, I'm going to squeeze in one. John on the Upper West Side. You got like 15 seconds, man.
Hello, I haven't been long talking to you because I got my wife to take care of. Here's the deal.
You got your wife to do what?
Yeah, my wife has Alzheimer's, so I can't stay on all the time. But
okay.
Here's the deal on Hillary. She got a snarky elitism that Bill gets. So he's a country boy. He can get away with it. But she's got this snarky elitism. It's going to catch up with her.
Okay, John, I'll leave it there. Take care of your wife. Thanks.
Born here, raised here, trusted, beloved, New York to the core. Geraldo, live and local, 77 WABC, where New York comes to talk.
Michael Jackson led the effort. Quincy Jones, right hand. U.S. Aid for Africa. 30 years ago today. 30 years ago today, they released that beautiful ensemble medley there. So we're talking Hillary Clinton at 7:07. Welcome back. So the weather is breaking, eh? We're going to get a little sunshine?
Yeah, by Sunday, we're going to hit close to 45 degrees.
And Uma is Muslim.
I got it wrong, but it won't be the first time I've gotten something wrong. Uma Abedin, she's been with Hillary for years. You know, it's sort of like her body woman, closest connection, closest confidant. And if you want to get to Hillary, you have to get through Uma first.
Well, it seems to me, and I just want to make this general statement before I get to your calls, and I appreciate them, and I understand the emotions generated by the former First Lady, former New York State Senator, Secretary of State, a woman hugely accomplished, but kind of overshadowed for years by her husband and his malfeasance or misfeasance. But she and he have stayed together. I don't know what that's about. I mean, that's loyalty. And then she's with Uma Abedin, despite the scandal that Uma's husband, former Congressman Anthony Weiner, got into. So I think that Hillary Clinton is a very fascinating person. She certainly generates huge emotions. And I think that even if you're not on the line, you will see the range of emotions that she generates. Let me start with Joan. We'll start with the lady in Queens. Hi, Joan.
Hello, Geraldo. Geraldo, when you first came on the show, I thought you were sort of moderate. But as I've been listening to you, I don't know how you can call yourself a Republican. You defend Obama on everything. Now you're trying to twist yourself into a pretzel to defend Hillary, saying that the law was not in effect when she became Secretary of State. But I've been listening to a lot of people who know about, like Judge Napolitano and other people who have knowledge of the Constitution. And they all say that what she did was not legal. Or I think it was, I'm not sure now if I'm using the correct word, legal, or was not...
Following the regulation?
Yes, right.
It's not about legal, it's about a regulation. And you're not going to sink someone, John, with all due respect. And, you know, whether you characterize me as whatever you characterize me, I am what I am, and I am proud of it. I don't think they have her here. I think that the real problem is, what do these emails contain? I mean, does she say to Uma, let's not give the Benghazi commission the XYZ paper that ABC wrote? You know, that's the danger. The substance, what the emails contain, I think ultimately the existence of the private email system is obviously an embarrassment, and it brings up all the sleazy charges and the seedy charges and this and that about Hillary. But it's not, other than that, it's not a substantive game changer. It just makes people remember why they didn't like her. Here's Joanne, another lady in Flushing. Hi.
Hi, this is Joan Geraldo.
Joan, hi, Joan.
I'd appreciate if you let me make all my points before you hang up on me.
Did I ever hang up on you before?
Yes, you did.
When? I mean, well, let's not get into our past.
All right. Okay. Listen,
it's a new day. It's a Friday.
I'll keep his hand away.
Okay.
Noam's got my hands behind my back.
Let's move forward. Okay. Listen, I wanted Hillary to be president in the last election when she was running against Obama.
Oh, 09, right. 08.
My son and me, who's a math major at Yeshiva University, would watch avidly to see who we were enthralled by the election. However, I have changed my mind about something. Hillary has not made comments about all the stuff that's going on. She looks like she's on Prozac. She had problems with her legs like I did in the past, where she had blood clots traveling. I don't think she's capable of taking on this responsibility. Now, my other comment is that let me make my other comment.
Oh, I was just amplifying and helping you out, Joan.
If Jed Bush would take on that guy, Gallio, the Spanish guy that I like, who I would love to be president, he will win the election.
Take on which guy?
Gallio. Is that his name, the Spanish guy?
Oh, Rubio. Rubio. Marco Rubio. Yeah, we all sound alike. Okay, I got it. Here's Jim in New Jersey. What's up, Jim?
Yes. A story just came to light that Hillary fired an ambassador, I think it was to Haiti, for having a private email account, and he didn't even have
it. I think you're right about that. I heard that, too. I don't have it in front of me, but I heard that, too.
The other thing is that Huma, her mother, was a member of the Muslim Sisterhood, which is the female division of the Muslim Brotherhood. And it's Huma's emails that should be looked at, and I think Trey Gowdy is going to subpoena Huma's emails.
Right, I know. I mean, Trey Gowdy is—he's like the happiest, pig in poop right now. He's got a whole bunch of real substance to deal with instead of, beating to death Benghazi, which has been investigated six ways to Sunday. Now they have a substantive issue. They have a legit issue. They have the oversight committee can now oversight these emails and see. And if indeed, and I heard that too about, I was going to Google it, then I didn't, maybe Noam can, about there was an ambassador who had a private email account. He was doing official business and she fired him, but the State Department had him dismissed. But I don't want to vamp on it.
I will check
just
it out.
Just check
you.
It out for me. Steve in Connecticut. What's up, Steve?
Keith, how are you, Romano?
Good man.
Yeah, somebody just brought up Rubio. That was Mitt Romney's biggest mistake. He'd be President Romney right now if he had picked Marco Rubio to run with him.
He would have done a lot better. I agree with that.
A hell of a lot. But Hillary, I don't think this thing is going to touch her one way or the other. It does call into question her competency. If that system is less secure than the official government servers and everything else. And for a high government official like her, that would be very stupid if it is less secure. But also, what was her motive? And I believe it was to shield a lot of her emails from
you don't think
side.
It was just for convenience sake, setting it up in Chappaqua?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. She's too smart for that. I think she's just trying to cover her tracks. But that's
but if, but if she is,
why...
but I get that, Steve, and I have a very intelligent call. I appreciate it. If she's too smart to do something like that for convenience, isn't she too smart to set up a private email server that was easily penetrated by bad people? You know, it just seems to me that they may have sins, these Clintons. They may have flaws or faults, these Clintons, but they are not stupid people. And I think that my beef with Hillary, remember at the end of her tenure as Secretary of State, and she was flying everywhere. I don't think there's a Secretary of State who ever had more frequent flyer miles than Secretary Clinton did. But I'm not sure exactly what message she was bringing here, there, and everywhere as she went on these various worldwide tours. It looked at some point like she was campaigning for president toward the end of her tenure before John Kerry took over. And there was some lack of attention to detail. And I all go back to the original sin, which in my book, contrary to what the caller said about me criticizing President Obama, President Obama launched the current wave of anarchy in the Middle East by his naivete in the Cairo speech and his being the birth father, the baby daddy of the Arab Spring. I think that that's what disrupted everything. Of course, you've got to credit George W. Bush for invading Iraq when he didn't have to. I guess that really is the true source of this particular river. But President Obama certainly did not help anything. Here's Chris in Manhattan. What's up, Chris?
Yeah, hi, Geraldo. First of all, I want to say I listen to you every day, but I disagree with you on absolutely everything you ever say.
How about if I say today's Friday?
Pardon me?
Today's Friday.
No, I know. Okay. Listen, the thing with Hillary and saying that she's willing to...
Oh, can I just say something? Can I just interrupt? That takes a real man to do that, to listen to talk radio, because most people listen to talk radio, not most, I mean, other than this program, they kind of echo. They want to hear their own thoughts echoed. This program is different because everybody is welcome and all kinds of views are represented. And Chris, that's why I credit you, your patience with me. Now, what's on your mind?
Okay, no, I mean, you piss me off every day. I never agree with you, but I listen every day. That's what you and your advertisers should be.
Absolutely right.
Because you get my juices flowing. But anyway, this thing about Hillary turning over the emails and saying, oh, I'll turn them over now. She controlled the whole enchilada. I mean, she could have erased what she doesn't want done. That's what the problem is. She owns the server. For her to say she'll turn over or she wants what...
But what's the difference? Hold it, Chris. What's the difference in terms of, remember Lois Lerner at the IRS? There's no allegation, as far as I know, that she used a private email, but she erased or made unavailable the public emails. I think the thing about emails is once they're sent, whatever the server, it's very difficult to really erase them forever.
No, she owns the server. That's why she did it. It cannot be traced. It's like tearing up a piece of paper and burning it.
All right, if someone out there is really an expert in this stuff, let me know if Chris is correct
now,
that these are irretrievable, because I think that once you make something, once you destroy a record that has to do with the government, that's the problem.
Well, that is the problem, that she was...
You think she would risk everything to do that? Chris, I got to go. I'm late.
Okay,
I'm late. But thanks for listening, even if I piss you off.
New York's biggest issues right now. This is Geraldo, 77 WABC.
There's a lot I need to get to on this last day of the week. I mean, Ferguson, Missouri, you know, that whole hands up, don't shoot thing. It appears that Michael Brown did not have his hands up, that account was not true. So that whole hands up, don't shoot, that became the rallying cry. I mean, fraudulently or falsely. I want to talk about Ferguson and what they did find there, which I find it's very important, and we need to talk about. I also I'm going to be in Glee tonight. Tonight's my first of two appearances in Glee, cool. So it's a riot. And Sue Sylvester, the actress Jane Lynch, will be joining us at the bottom of the hour. I'm delighted about that. One thing I've always been amazed at, and watching Headline News, Nancy Grace has been such a cheerleader for the execution, the death penalty on Jodi Arias. I was so relieved when the jury hung. I don't know what the composition of the jury was or what the vote was, but they spared the life of Jodi Arias, who slaughtered her boyfriend in a trial that was very, very sensational, covered by everybody, but none better than Jane Velez Mitchell from HLN, an award-winning journalist, dear friend of mine over the years. Jane, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Geraldo. It's so great to talk to you and hear your voice. And, you know, I'm no longer with HLN. I've started my own...
What is it? I heard that.
Well, yeah, I have an across-the-board multimedia news outlet where we cover crimes against people, animals, and the environment, and it's really taking off. I'm going to all sorts of protests.
What's it called?
JaneUnchained.com.
JaneUnchained.com. I love it.
Right now.
Well, JaneUnchained.com wrote the best-selling account of the Jodi Arias trial called Exposed, The Secret Life of Jodi Arias. So JaneUnchained.com. So tell me, do you think the jury was right to spare, under the laws in Arizona, the life of Jodi Arias?
Geraldo, we're learning a lot about this lone held-out juror.
Only one, you think?
Yeah, 11 to 1. There was one woman, and it turns out that she was a victim of domestic violence and that she had sought counseling for her two daughters. Her husband is a convicted felon, and she had apparently said in the deliberations that she thought that death would be a form of revenge. So the other jurors are fit to be tied, and they said, talking to reporters, that they thought that she had an agenda, that she was a stealth juror from the beginning who came in opposed to the death penalty. Now, I personally agree with you. I think Jodi Arias is a vicious, diabolical murderess who slit this guy's throat ear to ear, stabbed him 29 times. But I don't believe you solve violence with more violence. I don't believe you solve killing with killing. So I personally am opposed to the death penalty, and so I can't say I was relieved by this decision. This has been a hellish experience for the family of Travis Alexander. I've gotten to know them when I covered the original trial during which Jodi was convicted. But I have to say that I predicted this. Look, all you need is one. The statistically, the odds were against this because you have either they vote for life, okay, they vote for death, or mistrial. So you have life, mistrial, two against one. So the statistically, the chance that this would have ended up this way was pretty great. I said from the beginning when I released my book, I wrote a best-selling book on this, Exposed, The Secret Life of Jodi Arias, which debuted number 5 on the New York Times bestseller list. And when the paperback came out, my headline was, Will Prosecutor Snatch Defeat from the Jaws of Victory? Prosecutor Juan Martinez did a brilliant job convicting this woman. He should have left well enough alone and let her go to the clink. I don't think she's ever going to see the light of day. I would be shocked if this judge says, oh, I'll give you parole after 25 years. Although, you know, I cease to be shocked with these crazy trials anymore. So I think it was a bad move.
You know what? Let me ask you about it. And I know we don't want to speak ill of our pals, but I thought Nancy Grace with this deep breathing act, I mean, to me, it's not an act. I mean, she really believes it. But, I mean, since when do we, to me, Jodi Arias, for all its flamboyance, was domestic violence. You know, she killed her boyfriend in rage. I mean, if you start killing all the women who killed their boyfriends or boyfriends who killed their wives, you know, you start executing them, run of the mill. I hate to say it that way, but that's so statistically, they're the most numerous by far. I mean, the death rows of the country would be overwhelmed. Generally speaking, when a woman does something like that, a 25-to-life sentence is the appropriate punishment. For Nancy to be, oh my God, justice has been, you know, thwarted, and this slut. It was almost like she envied her looks.
Well, I didn't see any of that, and I have to say, Geraldo, I'm always going to back up Nancy Grace because I wouldn't have had a job at HLN if it weren't for Nancy and her team. I started out filling in for
Nancy. Noam does
a
Nancy show all the time.
I do. I can't believe you're saying such awful things about her.
What awful? I think she was cheering the death penalty.
Well, you know,
that's not awful. That's a fact.
Look, here's the thing. In studying Jodi Arias, I
brown noser.
She's above average intelligence. She's pretty. She could have taken her ability as a pathological liar, gone to Hollywood and an actress where she lied for 18 days on the witness stand. She could have gone to Hollywood and been a top screenwriter or a superstar.
Well, she is where she belongs, alive but behind bars.
Yeah.
And JaneUnchained.com, we can find it at a computer near you. Jane Velez Mitchell, a wonderful reporter, award-winning, best-selling author, and we wish you luck with your new venture, JaneUnchained.com, Jane.
Love you,
sweetheart.
Love you.
We love Nancy, too. I mean, there's a place for Nancy.
The sound of the city, Geraldo, where New York comes to talk, 77 WABC.
Pretty happy right now after you hear the Glee theme. Sure, she's heard that often enough. It was so fun guest starring in Glee. It was very much of a surprise. I was in L.A. doing press with Celebrity Apprentice. I got on the plane in L.A. I landed in New York. I had a message. Go back to L.A. They wanted you to be in Glee. I said, Glee? You know, my three daughters love it, and Erica, my wife, love it. And I said, what am I going to sing and dance? What am I going to do? They, don't worry. And it was a lot of fun. And the most fun was being able to meet and to play off of, in the actorish sense. I'm like actorish. I don't act. Jane Lynch, who plays Sue Sylvester, the coach of the cheering squad. You know, there's the cheering squad, the cheerleaders against the Glee Club. And they've played that, you know, that conceit for six years now, six great years at Glee. It's a wonderful, wonderful show. And I am delighted to bring on the Emmy Award winning star of Glee right now, Jane Lynch, who plays Sue Sylvester. Jane, hi.
How are you? It's so good to hear your voice, Geraldo.
Hey, we had fun. It was just so fun. And you were so kind to walk me through it. You were so gracious and so funny. And I don't want to give away what happens, but it's pretty outrageous. Have you had fun doing the show?
I have, but I got to tell you, those two scenes we did together were so much fun. And, you know, we just had a blast, and you are so game. You were so into it. the folks will see what happens, but he was a real pro and a real trooper.
That's tonight, Glee, at 9 o'clock here Eastern Time on Fox. You know, you've won the Emmy for it. You've had this wonderful run. And I love you as an actress, too. I just happened to be watching Talladega Nights with Will Ferrell, and you were so funny as his mom, I guess. And you've done so many other things. Two and a Half Men, you have a recurring role in that. You know, did Glee get too edgy? What happened with Glee?
Well, I mean, you know, it's one of the hardest things about network television in this country is that you do 22 episodes a season, and you know, they want you to be on forever. So if you look at that over five and a half years, you get 22 episodes a year. That's a lot of story. That's really pushing it. So I think, given those circumstances, I think our writers did a great job. But I'll tell you what, after these last 13 episodes this season, I couldn't be more proud of them. I think they're just amazing, and they're the vintage Glee. When we started out, everybody, we were such a station because everybody glommed to this show in the beginning. I think they're as good, so I think we're ending strong.
And you're going on, CBS has a pilot now, Angel from Hell. You play a larger-than-life guardian angel. I could see you being a naughty guardian angel.
Oh, it's a great script by Tad Quill, and I'm so excited about it, and it's a great part. And yeah, it was one of those things that just came my way, and it just click, 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 clicked. It was just everything lined up.
I know you're in Texas now because you're doing a cabaret act that comes here to Count Basie Theater. I know very well, my old neighborhood in Redneck, New Jersey. Is this the first time you've done cabaret?
Yeah, it is. Well, I did it actually last year. The show that I'm doing tonight and that I will do at Count Basie is a show that I premiered at 54 Below, which is this cabaret space there in New York. And I just kind of came up with it almost overnight, and I've refined it since. But myself and Kate Flannery, who's also in the show, she was in The Office. She played Meredith, the drunk or the slut, depending upon your perspective, the drunk slut. And
I love drunk sluts, personally.
I do, too. You always want to have one.
I heard that about you.
No, she's the sidekick, so she gets to be the drunk slut.
So
I'm the Dean Martin.
I get you. So do you sing and dance? Is that what you?
Well, the dancing is minimal, and when it is done, it's comic. But we have great songs, some hopefully engaging, funny patter. Kate is a riot. We're going to be here at the Paramount Theater, which is 100 years old this year. There are only 75 theaters, live theaters in the country that have reached that century mark, and it's a gorgeous place. A beautiful day here in Austin, and I hear you guys are having better weather.
We finally are. My goodness, it's been a horrible, horrible winter. Were you proud when you got your star on the Walk of Fame?
Was I proud?
Yeah. How'd you feel?
Yeah. You know, it's one of those unreal things, and it's still unreal. And yeah, you know, I got to say, it wasn't on my bucket list. I would have never been presumed to even wish for something like that. And every time it hits me, every once in a while, I go, oh, my God, I have a star on the Walk of Fame. I'm very,
that's
very
a big deal.
Grateful.
That's a big deal. You can patrol it, make sure no one puts gum on it or, you know.
Yeah. And it's in front of this great Hollywood bookstore, too, which makes me look kind of smart, I think, by association.
Jane Lynch, my special guest. She plays, of course, Sue Sylvester on Glee tonight. We have a couple of scenes. We have a lot of fun together is what we have. And she's
we do, yeah. You're going to love it.
Now, Glee did a lot in terms of they broke a lot of ground when it got naughty. And some people surmise that maybe that's why the middle of the country thought you were going too far. But you really did do a lot of things. Now, I thought, aside from the gay scenes and things of that nature, you had an actor, and I was in a couple of scenes with her. Developmentally disabled, a Down syndrome girl. I mean, that was kind of groundbreaking also, wasn't it?
Indeed. That Lauren Potter, and she is just lovely. She and I just did a cover shoot for the Down Syndrome magazine. She is fantastic. Her whole family is amazing. And, you know, her mother's one of those people who kind of said, I'm not satisfied with the services available for my child. So she's done a lot of groundbreaking work for the Down Syndrome community. And I'm really proud to call her a friend, both the whole family, and of course, Becky is the name of the character. She plays Sue Sylvester's best friend.
So great, and I won't give away the ending. She has a key part in the in our finale 2 weeks from now. But I love being with you, Jane. You're such a pleasant person. You're such a terrific actor, and just a great all around person. I wish you great luck with your not only Angel from Hell, but the Cabaret act, and we'll be looking for it. On April the 23rd in New York, right in Red Bank at the Count Basie Theater. You know, if there's a ticket available, maybe I'll come and say hi.
I got one for you.
All right, sweetheart.
I got two for you if you want.
All right, I love that. And thank you, and thanks for everything. And we'll be watching tonight for sure.
All right, Geraldo.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye, Jane. Bye-bye. I really was it was such a trip. It was really, I suck as an actor.
Yeah, I saw you on Seinfeld, and
I was in the finale.
Yeah,
in Seinfeld.
Yeah,
and then
right
the last season of Sopranos.
Oh yeah, I forgot about
that. Yeah, so I'm like the closer. They bring me out. Show's all shot up.
When they jump the shark, they bring you in.
David in New Jersey, thank you for holding on. 866 Geraldo, what's on your mind, buddy?
Hi, Geraldo. Thanks for taking my call. Here's my opinion and my prediction. Hillary will go down in the history of our country for two things.
Okay.
First woman president and second Teflon president. Nothing will ever stick to her. Her core of support is too strong. She's been through too much. The sympathy factor will always be with her.
And let me ask you this. I mean, I happen to agree with you that she will be the next president, certainly if Jeb Bush isn't the Republican nominee. But why do people cut her so much slack? And do you think her age, the fact that she'll be the second oldest president, we think that age will drag down that aspect of her?
Oh, why do they cut her slack, or why don't they?
Why
cut her
do they cut her slack?
Why do they cut her slack?
Yeah, why do they ignore or allow the Teflon phenomenon you describe so well?
Okay, so there's two factors here with women, and I don't want to take too much time. Older women don't. Older women are deeply offended by her. They're deeply offended she took Bill back. It goes completely against their sense of respect, their traditional respect for the sanctity of marriage. Younger women do cut her slack, but that's based on pragmatism and an incredible hunger for a woman president in a country where it's disgraceful we haven't had one.
You know, David, what an excellent analysis. Now, did your daughter get married?
My daughter got married on Monday.
Well, mazel tov to you, brother.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
All right, and thank you for calling.
Thanks, Geraldo. Bye.
All right. 46 minutes after that. Let me save a little time. I think we should bring in Curtis Sliwa.
You want me to go find him?
Yeah. The borough president threw him out of the house.
Yeah, so Melinda Katz was the woman he was dating for a while and has two kids boys with. And And now a story came out that his former radio partner, who is Governor Patterson, is dating Curtis's ex-wife, Mary Sliwa. It's very complicated, who used to be a salesperson here.
He has two children with the borough president?
Right. So while while he was married to Mary Sliwa, he fathered these two children with Melinda Katz, who's now the borough president of Queens.
Was she a public official at that time?
I think she was a city council person at the time. So it's three ex-wives, right? And a fourth.
That doesn't make him a bad person. Ron Kuby
giving us the details.
Yes, the details.
Three ex-wives and an ex-girlfriend.
All right, we'll straighten
up. I'm going to go find him. All right, he'll give me the clue.
That roast is going to be a lot of fun. Monday night, Gotham Comedy Club, Curtis and Kuby get roasted. But I have to say this, and I have Ron Kuby and Curtis Lewa in the studio here with Noam Layden and me. And Curtis, you came to my wife's birthday party, and you were married to the Bronx Borough President, Melinda Katz. And I see you at the party. You don't come up to me because you're pursuing, you're like sweating, you're practically dry humping some woman in the corner there. And I said to myself, what the hell is going on? I mean, it's not like this party was
See the woman, though?
Out of town or something. No, she was gorgeous.
Yeah.
This is like the movers and shakers of New York. And there's Curtis playing around. And then, wait a second, I'm not going to talk to you. I want to talk to Ron Kuby. Set the scene for us here.
First of all,
what's
Curtis,
your partner doing?
First of all, Curtis was never married to Melinda Katz.
Didn't they have children?
Yes. You know what, Geraldo? The two are capable of doing things independently. Right. Curtis had children with alleged frozen sperm that he had frozen long ago. Little Curtis creamsicles, if you will. They have.
Is that
two,
true story?
It's been sworn to in court. I wasn't, you know what? I got to tell you, I wasn't there for any of it, okay? I mean, this is all ew. Anyway, they had two children together. They lived together for a while. You know, it was a great relationship. They always loved each other, to the best of my knowledge. They just couldn't live together.
It is the borough Curtis, president you're talking about.
And so Curtis left.
A borough of almost 3 million people.
Exactly. Okay. So right now, Governor David Patterson, who was Curtis's fourth ex-radio partner, counting, let's see, his second wife was his
Lisa,
first ex-partner. Right. That was his second wife and also his ex-partner.
All right
now,
his
David fourth
Patterson
ex-partner is dating Mary Sliwa, who is Curtis's third ex-wife. Get your brackets ready, folks, for March
Wait,
Curtis
so
Madness.
David Patterson is dating Curtis's third wife?
Mary.
Third
right.
ex-wife.
Third. So, Curtis, now come to the microphone, please.
Yeah.
How do you stay so busy and still keep us safe from crime?
And Geraldo, you failed to mention that we have a new contest here at WABC to pursue the next Mrs. X. No. It's on WABCRadio.com. Have you seen some of the candidates? Are they not drop-dead gorgeous?
I'm sure you're a busy guy.
It's even a mother and a daughter.
So I know that you're doing this stuff for your hair. Are you also doing this stuff for the you-know-what? I mean, how do you stay so busy?
I know. I'm impotent. Remember, after getting shot and I had serious prostate cancer, I tell each of the candidates I'm impotent. And you know something? It doesn't stop them. It doesn't.
Wait, isn't that why Lisa kicked you out? Because
The reason for the divorce back then, it was not no fault. You had to have a reason. And clearly I was impotent. And that's what she filed on. And that's the way withholding favors, they call it. Sexual.
I just want to point out one thing. You know, the guardian angel's motto has long been from the suites to the streets. Curtis has now modified that. It's from the streets to the sheets. Thank you so much. Keeping us safe.
Now, men don't usually aren't so glib about impotency. I mean, is this your cover for one of your lawsuits?
No, it's true. For three years, I had serious impotency problems. 2 years after being shot, 1 year after the radical surgery to remove the prostate.
And so where did the creamsicles come from? Is that a true story?
Yes, that is all true. That's before I got married to Mary Sliwa, because I was dating Mary and Melinda at the same time.
And so why were you storing spermicides?
Because I was such a kid, and Melinda said, it's the only way I'll be able to have kids. I don't want to go in an anonymous way. I know you, your pros and your cons. And I said, no problem. And guess what? 6 years later, she used it. Bingo. Carter came about, and then Hunter.
And so, and how old are they?
Hunter just became four. Carter will be seven in May, and they're the two toughest Jewish kids who are ever going to walk the earth.
And so what will you do when they get of an age when they can hear you on 77 WABC say, Daddy, why are you talking about what goes on there and there and there?
There is that, isn't there? Like now, Curtis.
Trust me. They've got my DNA. They can deal with it. As long as Daddy goes out there and thump thugs, and particularly anti-Semites, which the boys are so proud of.
But it is going to be an interesting discussion on the Curtis and Kuby Show, because we're going to talk about the kiss between the two 13-year-old boys and what message that sends or doesn't send to young people. All the while, Curtis is busy promoting his next Miss X contest all over the place when he has two sons who are even younger. It should get frisky.
Curtis and Kuby, the big hit show, follows us right here at 77 WABC. Glee tonight.